Shocker, how you doing?
I'm good, man. And I have to tell you, at the Golf Den, when you crack a slice, it sounds exactly like a slice is supposed to sound in 3D surround all around you.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. Oh, that's good. But the good news is you don't have to walk to find your ball.
Yeah, no, that is the good news. You hit, and then you go grab a swig of your beer, and you let the computer do all its work. It's fantastic.
Bad news for Anton Lander. On the IR was your shoulder injury, Ryan, and it doesn't sound like it's something that he'll be only out with for a week.
Yeah, just when he got some momentum going too, hey? Like, he really, really needed to have this stretch to end the season. Really needed to continue to play at a high level for Todd Nelson. And this stretch was so critical to his pro career because he's really in the process of establishing himself as an everyday NHLer. And he's close to having done that. He's close. And I think absolutely he'd have been on the team next year. But the more time he had to build that resume and to get confident and play games and put up offense, the better it would have been for him. So this is just an incredibly unfortunate injury for Anton and for the Oilers. And I would say he's done enough to definitely have played his way into the mix for next year. But I was very interested to see what he did if he continued to play this well, where his confidence could have gone to.
Yeah, I think his confidence, definitely he'll have more going into training camp next season, I would think. And if anything, listen to the GM's comments. And if the GM likes you here in Edmonton, it seems you got a pretty good chance of sticking.
Well, as long as he doesn't change his mind on you. But, yeah, for sure. Listening, it's funny, you know, listening to Craig talk about Anton today, just how he never makes a mental mistake. I mean, he's just speaking glowingly about this player. And, you know, this is a guy they've had in their organization for some time now. I don't know. I don't know if it's, no matter who the coach was, if Anton had this in him and it would have eventually happened. I don't know if it's just a familiarity and a being comfortable with Todd Nelson behind the NHL bench for the first time for Anton in this situation. I don't know if it was just bound to happen, but, you know, he's only 23 years old. And I think we kind of need to keep that in mind. I think here in Edmonton, because prospects come into the system and play so soon, people's expectations on what guys do at a certain age are kind of through the roof. I think that for a 23-year-old player to a second-round pick to have taken this long, there's nothing wrong with that. That's kind of fairly normal development. Not everybody has to be ready to go at 21 or 19 or 22 even. Nothing wrong with 23, 24, 25. And so I think we need to kind of lower our expectations and really apply the same thing to Pitlick, apply the same thing to Curtis Hamilton, apply the same thing to Mark Marincin. 23, 24, 25, there's nothing wrong with it taking that long.
Hey, Shire, you're preaching to the choir, man. I've been writing articles telling people that for years. 5 years for guys outside of the first round is when you really can start to see if they've made it or not. And a lot of them won't, but the thing was, they couldn't have more youth anyway. Youth, too much of it in the lineup equals losing. And we've seen
for
way too long.
Did you read Lupo's comments the other day?
No.
Lupo, it's worth the read. Jonas Siegel on TSN.ca wrote it the other day. Lupo actually talked a little bit about Edmonton and how it could apply to the teardown in Toronto. And he basically said, and I know, you know, the Oilers probably weren't thrilled with it. Oiler fans might not love it. But Lupo kind of said, like, just going all young guys is tough. And you can see it in Edmonton because these young players go through all this losing. And just because you go young doesn't mean that it's going to be an answer and that it's going to work out for you. So some pretty interesting comments from Lupo in Jonas's article that are probably worth a read, and it's kind of a bit of a cautionary tale. I thought he made some pretty good points with what he said, even if you could debate whether he should have said it or not.
Oh, I have no problem with what he said. I'll never debate why if guys give their opinion and it's the truth, because people in Edmonton are saying, well, what's Calgary done different? Calgary has experienced guys insulating their young players, right? You've got Mark Giordano's and TJ Brody and a veteran goaltender who can make saves for you. And, you know, they got, like, Matt Stajan's not a great player, but Matt Stajan knows how to play the position, right? And you've got different guys like that. And they didn't just, they're not just giving all of their young guys, like, sure, you can bring in one young guy a year. The Oilers had six guys in 2011 in their top eight forwards, Ryan, who had less than 80 games experience to start the season. Like, it was mind-blowingly wrong.
Yeah. No, for sure. And that's the thing. Like, Like Lupul here, I got the quote. He says, that's the danger when you say you're going to completely rebuild a franchise. Your young players come up in a losing environment too soon. That's the danger. You see how it can happen in somewhere like Edmonton where they have good hockey players. That's the risk. Everyone always says it's good to finish last and get high pick, but some teams have had plenty of high picks and it doesn't work. It's probably wearing on them not playing on a winning team for however long Taylor Hall's been in the league, 5 or 6 years. So speaking pretty candidly about another organization, but it's the thing that we've been asking them and talking about for a long time here. And you need good veteran players to insulate your good young players. Yeah, and you know what? I think the other thing that's really been lacking here that McTavish is going to have to fix, and it'll be in the off season, is without rock solid goaltending, you just undermine everything else. Like, players play with less confidence. It's tough to develop young defensemen when you don't have the goaltending you need. It's tough to develop young offensive players when you don't have the goaltending you need because they can't just be free to do what they got to do. Everything is undermined, and I think if you look at the Calgary Flames, and there's a lot of differences between the two rebuilds and the two organizations, but what Calgary did is they already had a world-class defenseman in Giordano, but they solidified their goaltending right away. And I think if you're the Maple Leafs, that's got to be job number one, is to solidify their goaltending if Bernier is not the answer. And it's what the Oilers have not done through this process. And I think it's probably, it's not that they haven't tried, but I think it's the biggest mistake they've made in the last 4 or 5 seasons is not getting a sure bet one way or another in net, because it's undermined everything else in my mind.
Ryan Rashaga from TSN joins us. No argument here. Though they had a guy, and I know that he admitted that, you know, he needed to be a little bit mentally tougher, but even in Dubnyk's when he was on terrible teams, he still had 916, 914, yeah, and 920 save percentages, right? And sure, I know he needed to be mentally tougher. He admitted it. But, you know, did the GM help the cause by saying, hey, we don't think he's a starter after he had a 920 save percentage? Probably not.
Yeah, you know what? That's a fair point. That's a fair point. But Devin's going to have a thicker skin, right? At the end of the day, you have to come out and make the saves. You have to come out and be good from the start of a year. You cannot back your way into a season and start the way that Dubnyk did. So I'm a little more tentative to play the hindsight card on Dubnyk. I don't think that's necessarily fair. I think Devin got lots of opportunity here, and it took for Devin to move on from the organization that drafted him, like with so many players this happens, for him to find it, the headspace, find the confidence to find the game. I think you can question the Oilers on a development front because they didn't have a great place to play for the, at least what was it, a season and a half when he was coming up in the minors. But he got lots of opportunity to be the starting goalie. And regardless of what the general manager said, Devin just didn't play well enough when it mattered. And for the Oilers to have given him more time, as opposed to not making a move, it would have looked foolish on their part to do so. So yeah. I'm a little more hesitant to say, hey, well, you know, they made the wrong decision. Now, Kyle Brodziak, wrong decision. Kept Pouliot instead of him, wrong decision. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
I will say this, though. Devin Dubnyk really didn't play well for 30 games at the start of last season. The other three years?
That's when hockey matters, though.
But, yeah, no, but Ryan, but the previous 3 years, over a span of 150 games, he'd had 916, 914. Look at the average of his save percentage. It was 918. That's pretty good, right?
But the pressure of truly having to be the guy.
Well, what do you mean? He was the guy. He was the guy the whole year when he was 920. He played 39 out of 48 games.
Yeah. No, and you're right. Like, it's not like he had never done it before, but it was never more important for Devin to be good than at the start of last year.
Yeah, I just
and there's I don't fault the Oilers in any way, shape, or form for moving on from him. I don't. I was there. I watched it. We all saw how bad it got. And I'm not being hard on Devin here because he's turned himself around but I just, moving Devin at the time was the right decision, and I don't second guess that one because it was just that bad.
Well, it's not the moving him. I'll second guess why your GM, because here's the thing, you can look, since the day Craig McTavish was hired, it is obvious based on actions and words which players he likes and which players he doesn't like. It's pretty painful. He didn't have faith in Devin Dubnyk, even though he was coming off a 920 save percentage. Think about that. Justin Schultz comes off the season he had, Ryan, which was terrible, and he gets Norris Trophy potential after he signs a contract. Jeff Petrie, who had a better season last year than Schultz, still not great, but better, he gets a, well, we think he's a high-end asset, but we have to see what the level is. And Justin Schultz gets Norris Trophy candidate potential. Sam Gagne, who McTavish liked, gets a three-year deal at $4.8 million a year out of unrestricted free agency, right? After one decent lockout shortened season, but Devin Dubnyk gets the, well, we don't know what we have. Like, it's so Jekyll and Hyde with the players from the management. It's obvious to see who he liked and who he didn't.
Well, I mean, I got news for you. Every manager in the league has his guys. Every manager in the league has the guys that he...
But they, do you say it outwardly, Ryan?
Yeah, and that's totally fair. I mean, pretty clear from Craig. I mean, even just in a one-year deal last year, pretty clear what his intentions were with the player. He does make it quite obvious who are his guys and who... you know, he sees as part of the solution, like, for sure. And that's part of Craig being a guy who generally lets us know what he's thinking and feeling and being upfront with things. And sometimes you reveal a lot. And what Craig has revealed to us is what he did back then was about Devin Dubnyk and the goaltending. It was obvious. But every GM is like that. They're just not necessarily all as vocal and make it obvious to us that way.
Ryan Rashok from TSN joins us. Petrie sitting out, wise move, because no point risking it. And maybe we'll sit out tomorrow as well. What do you think they're going to do for this? Is Pouliot going to play center just for the weekend? Because I'm not sure they have to bring up Bogdan Yakimov. Like, what do you think they're going to do for the center position for the next 3 weeks?
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like Pouliot. I mean, Pouliot will be there tonight, right? That's the plan. Hendricks can play, but I think they probably want to keep that line intact. So it's a little bit tough because if they want to keep the Gordon Hendricks Klinkhammer line intact, then you're not going to be able to use him in that spot. So I don't know. I think they'll take a look and see how Pouliot fits, see how he looks in that position, and if he looks pretty comfortable, then maybe they don't have to. But at the same time, it wouldn't be the end of the world to get a look at somebody else. Although Yakimov, I know, hasn't been shooting the lights out down there. So I think a lot of it will depend on how Pouliot looks tonight, if he looks like he's in place.
Yeah, well, it illustrates, again, the lack of center depth, Shogger.
Yeah. No, for sure. And, I mean, I don't know. They got... So you got Nugent Hopkins and you got Derek Roy, and then you got Boyd Gordon and you got Anton Lander, and then this is all about, remember at the start of the year when they kept Will Acton instead of Steve Pinizzotto and everybody was all up in arms because Pinizzotto had earned it? Well, this is the trouble you run into if you don't have a center as your extra forward. This is the trouble you run into, and that's exactly the position they're in now. So at the start of the year when it made sense to have, it was a positional need. That's why you always make your extra forward a centerman, because when a centerman gets hurt and then you play 2 days later, he might be in tough to fix it. And that's what they face right now. But they don't have a center as an extra forward, and that's a problem for them.
And lastly, Craig McTavish said today he expects 80% of the roster. Now, I think that's probably a fair, accurate number, because I'm not sure how many changes you realistically can make. But if we're just doing it out of a 20-man starting roster, that means 16 of 20 right now are on the team. We can all assume Jeff Petrie isn't one of them, right? So who else do you think, if we're just going on that number, is not here next year? Other than a goalie, so now there's only two spots left, because one of the goalies definitely isn't coming back.
Well, I mean, I think Keith Ollie probably isn't back. I think that... Well, they just did Klinkhammer. I think that Derek Roy, there's a chance he won't be back. There's a chance that, Victor Foss won't be back. Who knows what happens with Scrivens here, but he's likely back. So, I mean, how many guys have I just done? There's four or five guys right there. And that kind of takes you pretty close to that number. And it could end up being more. But this I do know. It was a lot of turnover from previous seasons to this season, too many guys. And so I think McTavish likes the idea of having a lot of familiar faces in that lineup, a lot of similar players, and not as much turnover this year. So with those guys I mentioned, plus potentially a draft pick, depending on who they get, I think any one of the top three has a chance to step right in. and then any free agent signings.
Well, but you mentioned the backup goalie, the number seven defenseman. Like, you know what I mean? If you can change the fringe guys, this team just simply is. If McTavish doesn't change more than that and likely make a significant move amongst his wingers in his top six, I don't see how they improve.
Yeah, well, and maybe that's Nail Yakupov, right? Maybe that is in the form of a trade involving Yakupov in the offseason with a team that allows him to shift the shape of this a little bit. But I think he wants to keep Derek Ryan down to let him play with Nail. Nail is playing well, let him finish the season strong, get the trade value up there, so that if he wants to do a deal, there's at least a reasonable deal out there to be had. Because 6 weeks ago, there wasn't. 8 weeks from now, or 10 weeks from now in the offseason, there could be.
Minnesota Wild going to make the playoffs?
Well, they're playing well. They're playing really well. Tough to bet against a team that's won, what have they won, 8 of their last 10? Something like that. So tough to bet against that team, but things are so tight, man. So if you're asking me, you know, if I got to call it right here, right now, I probably would say not. But I mean, stranger things have happened. So they're playing really well.
Well, they're right in there. They're only five back of the Jets with three games in hand. So they it's going to be a great race in the West. The bottom six teams battling for four positions. And maybe one day, Rashager, dare to dream, we will actually be covering a playoff race again. That would be nice.
Well, I'll be covering a playoff race come playoff time. It just won't be in my own town.
That's the crummy thing
about being the bureau reporter, right? When your team never makes the playoffs that you cover, you spend the entire time on the road as opposed to half the series at home. So for very selfish reasons, I can't wait for the Oilers to make the playoffs because then I'm home for half the first round at least.
Even if it's only
four games.
I would like it strictly because the city will be a better place. It would be nice.
Yeah, I know. And it's fun, right? Like, it was a blast back in 06 when all that happened. It was an absolute blast. So, this city is well overdue. And Craig's got to get on his horse here because patience are running thin.
Shager, have a good weekend. We will. Oh, by the way, the Oilers get a win this weekend?
Yeah. You know what? I'll give them a win. One of the two games. I'll say they win tonight.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to get by Anaheim, but I think they're going to win tonight. I think the offense and the power play are going well enough tonight. They're going to solve Dubnyk and beat Minnie.
All right. Well, we'll disagree on that one. Appreciate your time.
Okay, buddy. See ya.